Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's dive right into the Lake Show. Monday evening news talk, 830 WCCO. Let's talk fighting. I thought it was awesome to be at Target Center last night. And to my right was former NHL hockey player Mark Parrish. He's sitting there with his wife, right to my left. And the moment that the skirmish broke out with the Timberwolves and the Detroit Pistons, I expected Mark to get up out of seat and run on the court. I did. He's a hockey guy, right? Like, in all seriousness, I'm happy that the Minnesota Timberwolves engaged with the Detroit Pistons last night. For one reason, the Minnesota Timberwolves need to set the tone and let it be known that they will not be bullied. I have stated this several times the last few years, and I will say it again, that we have to set the tone and create the narrative that we will not be bullied, that we will not be punked, because there's a lot of bullying that's going on in the world. But on an NBA basketball court with one of the best young rising stars in the game in Anthony Edwards, you got to let people know that when you try to bully us, any member of this team, we will take action. So to Dante DiVincenzo, thank you. To Naz Reid, whether it was a finger wag that got it all started, I thank you. It's important that you put your foot down. And the reason why I say that is because let's bring up multiple instances in which the Minnesota Timberwolves were viewed as little guys that can be bullied. Let's go back a few years. Remember in Philadelphia when Karl Anthony Towns ended up on the bottom of that scrum with Joel Embiid? We were talked about in not a good way. That they got the better of that incident. How about when Rudy gets choked by Draymond, who likes to be a bully? He thinks he's the Debo of the NBA. How did that go? That was not a good look. So last night, we, for the first real time, said we're not going to take anything from anybody. I love it. Set the tone. Let them know it's a new day. And the reason why, secondly, I think that that's extremely important, not just based on the history of the last few years, but on for the simple fact that the face of this franchise is Anthony Edwards. And I think that everybody that watches basketball understands how supremely talented he is, that he's a star. And that he's the type of guy that if you put the right pieces around him, you could maybe one day win an NBA championship. You know, there was a similar type of talent many, many years ago. His name, Michael Jordan. And I'm not saying that Anthony Edwards is Michael Jordan, but just follow me for a second. Early in Michael Jordan's career, there was this team by the name of the Detroit Pistons, who, by the way, that's who we fought with last night. And what did the Detroit Pistons and other teams in the East try to do to Michael Jordan? Not actually try to do, but you know what they did early on? Oh, they beat up on him. They bullied him. They took it to Michael Jordan. The Jordan rules. You guys have heard that before. But what eventually happened? They accumulated better talent and some enforcers on this team or on that team that said, we're done with that. Y'all want to fight? In the words of Kendrick Lamar, squabble up. We can do that. Bill Cartwright, he doesn't play those games. Charles Oakley, he don't play those games. Bill Winnington doesn't play those games. So that's the reason why it's important that you have to stand your ground and let it be known you're not going to play those games. To me, in my opinion, the toughest guy on the Minnesota Timberwolves is the skinniest guy, and that's Jaden McDaniels. Jaden McDaniels, to me, is the guy that wants all the smoke. Dante, he's a dog too, and I'm glad he did what he did last night. And I was literally right there, and I didn't whip out my phone quick enough to get it from start to finish. I kind of got a little bit of the aftermath of it at Target Center. But, man, you have to go ahead and let it be known that we're not going to take your stuff. And specifically with the Detroit Pistons, because that's like their new identity. They're embracing the past. Isaiah Stewart is somebody in the NBA that needs to get checked. Because when you allow the bully to keep getting away with things, then it becomes a bigger monster. We've seen it with Draymond Green. Draymond Green has gotten so arrogant about trying to bully people that he punched a teammate in Jordan Poole. Isaiah Stewart, he thinks that he is the biggest bully in the NBA. And until somebody puts the check down on him, he's going to continue to try. But last night, this is what it sounded like at Target Center with Michael Grady, Jim Pete, for FanDuel Sports Network.
Good player. Good fake. Reed turned the corner and is fouled by Holland.
Man, oh, come on now.
Stevens. Big time brawl now in the front row. It's going to take a lot to break this up.
You got to stay out of the crowd. This is not good.
This has been building on the last handful of possessions. Nas Reed had taken exception to Holland and was wagging a finger in his face. This crowd, who braved the cold and the snow, on his feet applauding the intensity. The Timberwolves finally showing some fight in this ballgame. And the officials are going to have a lot to look at as you look at DiVincenzo's neck.
Coaches are getting into it. The coaches are literally fighting with each other now, too. J.B. Bickerstaff getting into it with Pablo Prigioni. I mean, this is ridiculous. And they're both wearing black, so you can't tell who is who. I don't think I've ever seen that before, Michael. I don't think I've ever seen a big melee like this.
651-461-9226. What did you make of last night's incident? Were any of you out there listening at Target Center the way that I was last night? I'd love to hear from you. 651-461-9226. The text line from the 763, it says, I'll take a soft cat over fake tough guy Dante any day of the week. Okay, let me address that. Two things. No one here, or at least let me just speak for myself. I would never take Dante DiVincenzo over Karl Anthony Towns because Karl Anthony Towns is a future Hall of Famer and a better basketball player. So that's not saying anything. But if you're talking about toughness, how was Dante DiVincenzo a fake tough guy when he's putting hands on people? Like, are you watching? Are you watching anything? Literally, you're calling Dante the fake tough guy when he's willing to put hands on, and you've never seen Cat put hands on anybody. That does not compute, Texter. That makes no sense. What did you make of it last night, Chris?
It doesn't surprise me that the Pistons are involved in everything, going back to the Bad Boys days, and then the Malice at the Palace, and whatever we're calling last night, tussle at Target Center. Like, I don't have any idea. But I think there is something to be said for finally putting your foot down, because I think there is this perception that the Wolves, you know, at times Yeah, I think the perception is that the Wolves can be a little soft at times. And if you got to be able to stand up for yourself. And that's the thing. If Dante was in the middle of it and he's going to get suspended, you know that something's going to happen with Nas. Like, there's going to be some sort of fallout. You can't, especially with the way that this team is changing, the Pistons, if a team in today's day and age is going to embrace the old bad boys mentality, then sometimes you got to push back. And until you push back, the Wolves are going to be, I mean, they're going to be looked at as a punching bag. And sometimes you have to push back a little bit. I didn't have a problem with it. I didn't have any problem with it whatsoever watching.
I said 5 years ago that if I was one of the people in the front office of the Minnesota Timberwolves, I would have signed one of the Morris twins. I would have signed one of the Morris twins and have them regulate, have them enforce, have them deal with the stuff. Yeah.
Is that needed now in the NBA? Because I feel like we've gotten away from it, and now the Pistons they're zigging when everybody else is zagging.
I think that there are still teams that have people that are willing to
go out there and
fight.
Thug it up a little bit?
I mean, that are willing to really, like, they want smoke.
They're scrappers. I almost said crappers, but scrappers. Yeah.
Like, if you had to put a bet on, if forget about betting. Mm-hmm. Who is the one person you think that you would take in just a Royal Rumble? NBA.
In the NBA? Oh, boy.
This one's obvious.
Okay. Who is it?
No. You take a guess.
Oh, God. See, I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you who I would take right now.
The guy.
To be the one guy to scrap.
Without question, that if you're throwing hands. And I'm not trying to promote violence in the NBA, but you got to have some tough guys. Bobby Portis. And it's not even close.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bobby Portis doesn't play those games.
Yeah.
He once broke a teammate's face.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Bobby Portis doesn't seem like he's got many Fs to give at this point.
Text line 651-461-9226. Your phone calls, your texts. We take them next here on the Lake Show. All right, welcome back to the Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Because it's not clear to some people, because I know that listening comprehension is difficult at times. I'm all for the Wolves standing up for themselves and not allowing people to put them in headlocks and chokeholds. Yes. Yes. I understand that sometimes people don't understand the message. But yes, Dante, Nas, any Timberwolf player that said, we have had enough. I'm all for it. Now, one thing I really couldn't see last night, I'm not sure if you could see it, Chris, but I couldn't really see what was going on with my guy, JB Bickerstaff, and
Pablo
Prigioni. I really couldn't see it.
As far as I knew, there was just like some jawing back and forth. Kind of like Jim Pete said, like everybody's wearing the black, and you kind of. When everything started to kind of get all mumbled, jumbled together, it was kind of hard to pick out who was who, just trying to, because everything, it's like they'd start to separate, and then the camera would focus to somebody else and another scrum that was going on. So I couldn't tell exactly what it was.
Yeah, it was just interesting. I just feel like as you mature as an organization and as a team, you just got to put your foot down, man. You have to put your foot down, and you can't let people walk over you. And this isn't even just a sports thing. This is just a life thing.
Yeah, and there's a difference, I feel, between kind of setting your boundaries and being dirty.
Yes.
And being over the top. There's absolutely nothing wrong with setting those boundaries. Because kind of like, and I'm sure, Henry, you could see, like, you being in the building, you did kind of get the sense that, okay, this was kind of... this was building and something was going to happen. You just didn't know how or when.
Yep.
And
it was bubbling because right a couple minutes before, you could tell in the interaction, remember when Isaiah Stewart was putting his hands on Dante?
Yes, yep.
Unnecessarily.
Yeah, and it's the physical nature that Detroit wants to play. And I think that's part of what they're going to do. That's part of what makes them who they are. And that's what part of the reason why they've had kind of this renaissance is they've got their own superstar in Cade Cunningham. But then they've got, you know, that kind of this other subset of the team that, you know what, you got your bigs. They'll get a little dirty. They'll get a little physical. And if you're not going to match that, then guess what? They're just going to bowl you right over. They're going to make the officials make those calls. And if the officials are going to eat the whistle, guess what? You're going to have to play that. And finally, enough was enough. And I don't think this is the first time that a team has gotten into a scrum with the Pistons. I think it's just because it went into the stands again. And it just, I think that's kind of why this has gotten so much attention.
Well, we had the, remember a couple of years ago, it was, what was it? It was, remember it was LeBron James had accidentally hit Isaiah Stewart like in the face. It wasn't anything on purpose.
Remember
he ended up getting cut and he was bleeding and he's running around like he's...
like a madman.
Yeah, like a madman. Like that's where the whole persona of I'm Mr. Tough Guy started for him. And then you've had some incidents with Ron Holland. I just think that they're embracing the bad boy business.
Absolutely. And you know what? For a team that has been so downtrodden for years, if this is what is going to... I'm not saying it's right, but in today's NBA, if this is like... you know, if you're, you know, Detroit's a gritty, tough, badass, take no crap sort of town, and this kind of embodies that, well, guess what? I mean, the NBA, your NBA team is going to kind of, you know, they're going to adapt that for their fans, and their fans are probably, you know, their talk radio station probably loving it at this point, and that's okay for them.
And I think for them, part of embracing it is because they're a young team, right? Like the Detroit Pistons, when was the last time they were relevant? They're relevant now.
Yeah.
And by the way, Cade Cunningham didn't play last night.
I know, yep.
And he's
exactly.
their best player.
Exactly, yeah, he's been out
He would have been the second best player on the court last night.
Yes, no question. And, you know, for those that have not seen Cade Cunningham play, dude's a baller. Dude's a superstar. Like, he's amazing. He's must-see whenever he's on TV. But you do. You have this chance to... you know, I don't even really know if embracing this tough guy attitude would work for maybe any other franchise, except for maybe the Indiana Pacers, because I go back and I think about the Antonio Davis, Dale Davis days with Reggie Miller and Detlef Schrempf. You know, maybe the Knicks with, you know, Anthony Mason, Charles Oakley.
I think that there are teams in the NBA that have some tough guys.
Well, I'm just saying overall, like a team, like that's their identity. I mean, yeah, you have tough guys all over. I mean, Steve, you talk about Bobby Portis being a guy I wouldn't want to mess with. I know one guy I wouldn't want to mess with based on, you know, just what I've seen is Steven Adams.
Yep.
I mean, he's another guy. But when you're talking about a team as a whole, the Pistons are kind of, you know, bad boys 2.0. And sometimes, you know, I mean, maybe I don't know if this sends a message to the rest of the NBA about the Wolves not taking any grief, or maybe it'll be a one-off, you know, maybe they'll be tried again, but, you know, I think the cat thing with Joel Embiid, I think that didn't help there. That did not help the perception of the Wolves, but, you know, I don't know if this is going to matter to people, but for one night, it felt pretty good.
We'll get back to sports at the top of the hour. We'll talk to Trent Tucker. He's been a part of a few things. He played with the Bulls. He played with the Knicks. We're going to talk to him at 7:05. But coming up next, let's enter into the world of politics. Let's talk to Aaron Rupar from the Public Notice Newsletter. He joins us next year on The Lake Show. And Aaron, as always, joining us on the John Shustakoa Banker Hotline. How you been, Aaron?
I've been good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, just still kind of wrapping my head around last night. Were you at Target Center last night? I'm assuming you were.
I was, and I was telling Chris before we went live here that I was actually getting a beer when that happened. So I was in line, and I heard the oohing and aahing, and, you know, I could tell there was something unusual happening. And then as I walked back into the arena, you could see the coaches kind of squaring off at center court. So then I was really confused because that's, you know, you hardly ever see coaches like, you know, get up into each other's faces like that. So then I watched the replays and figured out what happened. But yeah, I've never quite seen anything like that. It was very unusual.
Yeah, that was something else. But like, I don't know if you heard my opening statement or segment. I like the fact that we have a team where we got guys that are going to stand up for ourselves. Like, you've probably heard this from me for years. I didn't like the situation with Philadelphia with the whole Embiid, you know, on the bottom choking cat. I didn't like when Rudy got choked by Draymond. It's about damn time that we said we've had enough. We're not going to be bullied anymore.
I'm with you. I'm a little worried about losing Dante for a few games. You know, I'm assuming he'll be suspended at least for a couple, and then who knows about Nas, you know, because all these games now are so key if we're going to get out of the play-in. But I'm with you. I mean, it was cool to see that, you know, Detroit, who was playing really physically, that the Wolves weren't shying away from that. And, you know, when it got chippy, they were right there being chippy in response.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the world of politics, because it seems like every single time that we talk, there's some new news that has people, we just has us all kind of like scratching our heads with regards to what's going on with the Trump administration. The latest is that Donald Trump, it seems like, is trying to plan to make a way through the courts, possibly, or just try to make himself relevant or make it irrelevant with regards to the rules surrounding being able to serve a third term. What do you make of the comments that he's made to the media? It was Kristen Welker from NBC, that he's not joking about the possibility of serving a third term, despite the 22nd Amendment.
Yeah, you know, I really wish I would have been wrong about this, but I was saying as far back as the first part of 2020, when Trump started attacking mail voting and saying that it was fraudulent and that, you know, that the mail ballots were inherently corrupt, that he had no intention of leaving willingly, you know, after the 2020 election if he lost. And unfortunately, I was correct. I mean, it took a failed coup. And then once he was out of options to, you know, finally come to terms with the fact that he was going to have to leave. And you know, even that very day when he got in the helicopter and left the White House, I was still kind of wondering if there was some last minute trick he was going to pull to try and stay in power. So I think it's the same this time around. I mean, to me, I think the plan that, you know, seems to be kind of in place for him is that he'll just run again and basically dare the courts to stop him and claim a mandate from the people if he wins, and then kind of put the court in the position of trying to refute the will of voters. Now, you know, assuming that he's going to win again, I think is a pretty dubious assumption at this point, you know, with the tariffs and some of the economic hardship I think that's in store in the short term here. But, I, you know, I'm not surprised at all to see that Trump, you know, is flirting with this idea of basically becoming an autocrat. And, you know, I'm a little disturbed by the fact that it's become kind of normalized already where, you know, just before we got on this call, Trump was talking about it from the Oval Office to reporters. And, you know, I posted a clip and it's kind of people are kind of yawning in response to this, where it really should be kind of a five alarm, you know, that our democracy is very imperiled if he goes through with anything like this.
And that's one of the reasons why, respectfully, to all the people out there that at times get tired of me bringing up Trump things and Trump antics and things that he says and irrational stuff that he brings up and just very bad things for our society, is that Henry Lake's not going to normalize it. Like, we're going to talk about the things that he's doing, and I don't think that we do that enough across the board. Am I wrong there, Aaron? Because, you do a fine job of talking about the key issues here in the country and around the world, and I applaud you for that, and you let it be known your stance, but also, like, just the weird things and stances that politicians do. But do you think that we, and when I say we, I'm talking about in general, mass media, do you think that we do a good enough job of attacking the things that are being promoted and talked about that are insane, that are ridiculous, that aren't rational? Because I think that we as a whole have normalized the MAGA movement.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a chicken and egg where I'm not sure if it's the media or if it's Trump and Republicans who have kind of normalized this stuff. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure how to assign blame to that, because, you know, I think a lot of the time, one of the things that Trump does effectively is there are so many scandals at all times, and most of them don't directly impact people at this point. You know, even this talk of serving a third term, like, if it came to pass, it would obviously directly affect people. But I think that Trump has kind of trained his supporters to tune a lot of that stuff out as media noise, where, you know, even the Signalgate story last week, you know, Trump's talking point ended up being that it was a hoax. And, you know, I mean, anybody who read that story, the reporter didn't ask to be included in the text group. He just was added to it. But he's primed his followers successfully, I think, to kind of dismiss stuff like that as a media hoax. And even these comments about serving a third term, he made them directly to Kirsten Welker at NBC in an interview. But then today, you know, the talking point from the White House was, oh, you know, this is just the latest hysterical media, you know, not, he didn't call this one a hoax, but, you know, basically blame the media for being hysterical about this when the words are ones that he said to a reporter on record. So,
Well, let me throw this at you, Aaron. Do you believe, because a texter from the 612 is saying that they believe that this is all a distraction from what he's actually doing. Do you think that's part of the process here?
I'm pretty dubious about the distraction theories of Trump because, you know, I think there's room for many things to be bad at once. But, you know, I do think that as we get closer to House Republicans having to pass a reconciliation bill that will include most of Trump's agenda, so it'll include, you know, the tax cuts, but also cuts to Medicaid and possibly to, you know, other social safety net programs, that, you know, they're going to pull out all the stops to kind of make it seem like the cuts aren't really cuts. And so I don't doubt that there's a little bit of strategy to try and kind of throw people off the scent of things that will actually really hurt them and their loved ones. So, yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes I think there's some merit to the distraction stuff, but I think, you know, a lot of times Trump is just shooting from the hip. I mean, even today with tariffs, he was asked directly what his plan is for tariffs that he's going to announce on Wednesday. And he basically said, stay tuned. I haven't totally figured it out yet. You know, so I think sometimes people kind of assign too much strategy to him. And I think a lot of times it's as impulsive and kind of disorganized as it seems.
Yeah, we're talking to Aaron Rupar from the Public Notice Newsletter here on The Lake Show on News Talk 830 WCCO. Moving on to other matters. Why is Elon Musk trying to buy a Wisconsin Supreme Court seat?
So, yeah, this race in Wisconsin tomorrow, you know, has been heavily anticipated now for months. I mean, first of all, because it is the deciding seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which right now is 3-3. And even though these judges are technically nonpartisan, the parties kind of line up behind, you know, their favorite candidate. And the state Supreme Court of Wisconsin has a lot of power when it comes to election laws there, when it comes to gerrymandering, the legislative districts, the congressional districts. And the Supreme Court there played a very key role in entrenching Republican rule for about a decade in Wisconsin until 2023, when the Supreme Court finally flipped to a Democratic majority and allowed for the implementation of more fair congressional maps and legislative maps, which broke the GOP strong, the death grip that they had on the state at that point. So, you know, it's crucial both in terms of, you know, what's going to happen in Wisconsin, but then also, you know, again, congressionally, in terms of the way the seats are drawn up in the districts, you know, that could have national implications as well. And it's also kind of a testing ground to see where Trump's popularity stands at this point, you know, if it's eroded thanks to some of the things that he's done in office. And so you're right. Elon Musk was in Wisconsin last night and cutting checks for $1 million each to two different voters just because they signed a petition, you know, expressing an intention to vote. So it's definitely in a legal gray area slash probably illegal. But the state attorney general sued to stop it, and the high court there decided not to hear the case. So Elon's free and clear, and the election, which is, you know, highly anticipated, will be closely watched, happens tomorrow night.
You know, it's interesting because Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney, he essentially has kind of stated that, look, you know, the relationship between the U.S. and Canada is just, it's not in a good place, and we're not going to be talked down to. We're not going to be somebody that's going to be bullied, and we're not going to take the disrespect. Where are we at in terms of that relationship, and do we think that for at least the short term that between Canada and the U.S., it's going to be we are no longer necessarily allies?
Yeah, Carney's speech, which you mentioned, you know, it was very jarring to me because it was almost like a wartime speech, you know, kind of rallying the country around this shared threat, you know, which, of course, at this point is the United States. And, you know, I think that after that, you know, Trump released a statement the next day after talking with Carney on the phone where he seemed to try to kind of tamp down the, you know, the rhetoric, the temperature of it a little bit, and indicated that, you know, they have a lot of areas of agreement, him and the new prime minister there. And now we'll have to wait and see with this tariffs proposal, which will either be rolled out tomorrow or on Wednesday, you know, what that has in store for Canada, like to what extent that's really going to sever our economic relationship with them, which obviously here in Minnesota is very important. But, you know, also I've noticed that Canada has been taking out ads both in D.C. and in Pennsylvania, kind of highlighting the downsides of these tariffs for Americans, you know, because it's going to hurt people on both sides of the border. So, yeah, I mean, it was really jarring, you know, as someone who my whole life has just taken for granted that we're friends with Canada, to hear the prime minister there kind of portraying the United States as like a threat to the national security of Canada and their economic well-being. But I think the prime minister there is correctly sized up that Trump's strategy is to isolate them economically and to hurt their economy. You know, possibly if you take Trump at his word to make them more, you know, pliant towards possibly becoming the 51st state or some sort of American territory.
Yeah, I just find all of it kind of odd in that, you know, this is the way that we, and I guess specifically President Donald Trump, as the president of this country, is trying to lead our nation. And just kind of thing that I wanted to touch on with you, Aaron, tonight was last week when the Ukrainian leader Zelensky, when he had mentioned, and it was a very interesting statement that he made about Vladimir Putin, was that he's going to die soon. Now, this is in the midst of all the stuff that's going on with the Ukrainian and Russian war. The bottom line is that when he made the comment about Putin, and everybody's talked about his health, and there's a lot of speculation. Like, there's nothing definitive out there. I don't care. You can search on Google 24/7 and try to find something. There's nothing definitive, but there's been speculation that he's got a bunch of different ailments, one of which is prostate cancer. But the assumption by a lot of people, or their speculation, is that he's severely ill. Now, what did you make of Zelensky putting it out there? Because it just kind of threw me for a loop that he would be that vocal about something like...
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter. This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Like that.
Yeah, you know, there's been speculation about Putin's health going back years. I mean, I remember during COVID, first of all, he was extremely isolated during COVID where he wouldn't let anybody get near him. But then there were clips of him during events that he would have where his foot was shaking or his hand was shaking. And so people were speculating they maybe had Parkinson's or something like that.
Yep.
I will say that Putin, you know, the day that Trump's envoy was over there in Moscow a couple of weeks ago to meet with him, and if you remember, there was reports that he was made to wait as long as like 8 hours before Putin would meet with him. And Putin did an event publicly that, you know, was on camera that day because the clip was circulating because, you know, he was literally on camera when he was supposed to be meeting with Trump's envoy. And he seemed fairly healthy to me. I mean, granted, he was just sitting down, you know, so it's hard to tell. But, you know, I mean, it's funny how this kind of parallels in some ways a lot of the speculation surrounding Trump's health. And, you know, I guess that's kind of a hallmark of more authoritarian regimes where, you know, every time Biden went to the doctor, you get a full readout of what happened, or that's typical for most presidents. But with Trump, we don't know much about his health at this point. With Putin, you don't know much about his health. But, you know, any sort of kind of personalist dictatorship like Putin has, you know, if he was to die, it would throw the whole kind of regime into question because I don't think there's really a clear-cut successor there. So, you know, I'm sure Zelensky probably wouldn't mind if something happened to Putin because it would destabilize Russia, but I haven't seen any firm evidence that anything like that is, you know, imminent at this point.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. But I think that the one thing, and I love your reaction to my take on this, is I just don't think that Zelensky would put something out there unless he had really good sources that says that Putin is severely ailing.
You know, maybe not. With Zelensky, sometimes I would have to, you know, see the full context of what he said, because I'm assuming he said this in Ukrainian. So it probably be, you know, sometimes in English, yeah. I think the way he expresses himself isn't always the most clear. But you're right. I mean, certainly I would assume that Ukraine has, you know, good sources kind of in and around the Kremlin that might be kind of double agents. I mean, they pulled off drone strikes on Moscow. You know, they certainly have some intelligence capabilities. But I'd want to see it from a source a little bit more impartial than Zelensky, because he might be, you know, trying to accomplish his own ends in the context of the war, kind of rallying morale in his country rather than, you know, trying to report the facts on that one.
Yeah. Hey, great stuff as always, Aaron, man. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And next time, just wait till halftime to get that beer.
Yeah, I was joking with my wife that, you know, the most exciting thing that happened probably all season, I wasn't there for it. But thankfully, I was able to pull up the stream and get back up to speed quick.
All right, that's Aaron Rupar from Public Notice joining us here on The Lake Show. All right, so we'll break, we'll come back, and we'll wrap up hour one, and we'll do that next. Always a pleasure to talk to Aaron Rupar from the Public Notice newsletter. Hey, really quickly, because we've got halftime, women's college basketball, the Elite Eight is Texas and TCU. Texas leads by two at halftime. I think it's 23-21, so a low-scoring game. But there's something that I noticed over the weekend, and I noticed tonight. So over the weekend when TCU won in the Sweet 16 and advanced to the Elite Eight, the father of Haley Van Lith was celebrating a basket or something like that, whatever, and he walked down and he high-fived Jalen Suggs, Minnesota sports star, point guard, Orlando Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
I did not, no.
Okay.
I did not.
Tonight, up in the stands, we have Jalen Suggs again with Haley's jersey on backwards up in the stands with her dad. Is that like, are they a couple? Is that a power couple? I mean, do we got a basketball power couple?
I mean, I haven't worn a girl's jersey since high school. So I would say that's a thing. I mean, it's like wearing the class ring. It's I think they're going steady.
No. I'm not jumping to that conclusion. I'm just asking the question.
No, I know you're not, but it is interesting though, because you don't see that very often, right? Like I don't know the last time that I saw something. Yeah, maybe it's just kind of gone under the radar. Maybe they're just friends.
Well, I just did a Google search.
Okay.
There is a Yahoo article that's up. It says, and they actually have it attached to Athlon Sports, which was a thing like 40 years ago.
I like sporting.
It was. I used to buy it every year.
Oh, Athlon is great, yeah.
Haley Van Lith's NBA boyfriend is turning heads after TCU Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Jalen Suggs.
Yeah.
I see you, bro.
Go get you some.
I see you, bro.
Good for you, dude.
Coming up next, we'll talk.
Kids are going to be good ballers.
About the, I don't know, what would you call it that occurred last night at Target Center? We'll talk to Trent Tucker. He knows all about NBA basketball scrums. He joins us next.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.